today on the summit is Kevin Modis. Kevin, welcome and thanks for joining us today.
You're happy to be here.
I'll just share quickly with our audience on your background. Kevin Modis is a 2018 California Senate candidate and former House congressional candidate who serves as the outreach director for the California Brain Tumor Association. He focuses on the health and safety issues associated with the 5G wireless technology rollout and has been traveling to Washington, D.C. for several years, educating elected officials for health and safety to be restored in the area of wireless radiation exposure. So, Kevin, first of all, thank you for the work that you're doing in educating our public servants. And just to dive right in, what's going on in that area and how come there hasn't been more of a response to protect the public so far?
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question. And I think it's an important thing for people to understand who are in local areas being told that there's nothing they can do about this, that they just have to accept these exposures. When legislators say we can't do anything locally, they point to two agencies and two organizations, and I want to talk about them because this is information that they have to bring back to their legislators and say, yes, there is something you can do about it. The first thing people need to understand is we have a captured regulatory system, and we have a failure to regulate. First of all, it starts with the FCC. Now, the FCC oversees the human exposure standard guideline for wireless radiation. People need to understand, very importantly, the FCC is a captured agency. This isn't just my opinion. Harvard Ethics Department has done a report themselves, and it was called, FCC, captured agency. And I'll give you the exact title. They said how the FCC is dominated by the industries that it is presumably regulating. This is important for people to understand. This is a captured agency. The chairman is a former Verizon attorney. One of the newly elected commissioners, Commissioner Carr, used to work for a law firm that defended AT&T, Verizon, and CTIA from lawsuits. So the fox is guarding the hen house here, and that we're asking basically the wireless industry to regulate itself by putting the FCC in charge. The other thing that's very important for you to understand, you can go to the FCC website and see this, and I'll read it as a quote. At the present time, there is no federally mandated radio frequency exposure standard. People need to understand that there is no safety standard for wireless radiation. We have a safety guideline that is based on the recommendations from four non-government organizations that are highly dominated by the industry, that hold on to a long outdated safety guideline that only focuses on thermal exposures and actual acute burning for short-term exposures, not long-term exposures. So people need to understand that. Secondly, when the FCC is pressed on health and safety issues, and they are getting pressed on them now, they say, well, we take advisement from the FDA. Important to understand about the FDA. They do not have primary responsibility for these exposures. The FCC does. They're in an advisory role. That makes a huge difference. The other thing you need to understand is the FDA has done research in collaboration with CTIA, the Wireless Lobby and Trade Organization, showing how conflicted and captured even the FDA is. And you can look this up on their website. Look under CRADA, C-R-A-D-A, Cooperative Research and Development Agreement. Okay, this is where they explained that they've made an agreement with CTIA and they did research regarding the mechanistic studies and how this damages DNA in terms of their exposure assessment studies. So the most important studies in terms of this issue were done in collaboration with CTIA. So when the FDA says that this is a safe technology, first of all, they're not doing any safety testing, and that's important to understand. And the studies they've done have been in collaboration with CTIA, and we shouldn't be surprised if they didn't come up with any concerning findings. But let me read you off the FDA's website, because this is important. Quote, under the law, FDA does not review the safety of radiation-emitting consumer products, such as cell phones and similar wireless devices, before they can be sold, as it does with new drugs or medical devices. So this is in their own words. So when they say this is safe, I don't know what they're basing it on, because they don't do safety testing. The next thing to understand is oftentimes people point to the FCC, then the FDA points to the FCC points to the FDA, and then they say, well, the American Cancer Society says this is fine and there's not much to be concerned about. Let's talk about the American Cancer Society. First of all, it's not a research organization. It's an organization designed to take in funding to provide to people who have cancer to help provide support. And what's very important for you to understand is AT&T is one of the corporate partners of American Cancer Society. You also need to understand they have a global council which advises them globally, and there's 10 CEOs in this global council. Three of them are wireless related. Motorola is one of their global CEO advisors. Also keep in mind that their executives, some of them, come directly from the wireless industry. For instance, Wayne White, who's one of their executive vice presidents, used to work for AT&T, Verizon, Motorola, Octel Mobile, and General Electric. They basically worked for every wireless company you could work for. So when the industry points to the American Cancer Society and saying there's no problem, they are basically pointing back to themselves. This is important for you to know because they will throw this out, whether it's legislators locally, or if it's the industry themselves, or it's media people who don't want to cover this issue. You need to be able to come back and say, these are highly captured, compromised organizations and agencies, and you need to look at the evidence. You need to know that people are getting sick from this. The next organization they point to is the World Health Organization. And this is pretty fantastic, actually, because the World Health Organization already classified wireless as a possible carcinogen in 2011. And what's interesting about this is since then, we've got enough scientific evidence that scientists believe and can clearly argue that we have enough evidence for a class one human carcinogen classification. Why is that important? Because if you classify it as a class one carcinogen, like cigarette smoke and lead, then you need to warn people about the harm and you need to minimize exposure, not maximize it as we're doing now. Important to understand is the World Health Organization, instead of listening to its own collaborative organization, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, which classified it as a class 2B carcinogen, they are referring to ICNIRP, which is a group self-appointed from industry that is holding on to this outdated idea that there are only heating effects and there are only acute burning effects, that anything below or before heating isn't an issue. So this is very important for you to know. And if you want to know more about this, you can look it up. Anthony Miller, who is a long time, he's a medical doctor, research scientist, has been a long time advisor for the World Health Organization, more than 10 years. He recently wrote a paper arguing the class one human carcinogen classification and providing the evidence to support it. And you can find this just by Googling his name, Anthony Miller ResearchGate. The other scientist that has come out very clearly in saying this is a class one carcinogen is Leonard Hardell. And you can find his work and his paper arguing for class one carcinogen at Leonard Hardell ResearchGate also. He is an MD and a PhD, but what really defines and differentiates Dr. Hardell is he's done the most research, and at last time we counted it, 80 different studies looking at brain cancer and cell phone radiation specifically. So in this area, we have to believe he is the preeminent authority. He's arguing class one carcinogen, and you can find him at Leonard Hardell ResearchGate for more information there. He also wrote a paper, and I encourage you to look it up, and I'm gonna quote it really specifically. World Health Organization, Radio Frequency Radiation and Health, A Hard Nut to Crack, where he basically explains how the World Health Organization has formed a subgroup called the EMF Project that is made up of scientists that the industry uses to defend them from lawsuits in going through and systematically dismissing the latest evidence and holding on to this class one and to denying this class one classification or an increase to class 2B, which would be a probable carcinogen. And he kind of explains what's happening at the World Health Organization and how they've been compromised. He personally went with a group of scientists to talk with the World Health Organization that weren't open to it. But understand this about the World Health Organization. Two-thirds of their funding now comes from outside sources. And we have the documentation to show that. And behind the United States, the second largest funder is the Gates Foundation from Microsoft founder, Bill Gates. We also found in the year that we looked, which was 2015, that the Telecommunication Workers Union donated $800,000, and that Cisco donated another $275,000. So again, when the industry points back to the World Health Organization, they're pointing back to a captured agency. They might as well be pointing back to themselves, because they're ignoring their own collaborative group, which is the International Agency for Research on Cancer, through the World Health Organization, and deferring to an industry controlled group, which is ICNIRP. So people need to understand this and come into meetings armed with this information to keep legislators from just denying this concern about health effects, and from insisting that they do something. But the bottom line is this: there is no safety testing for wireless radiation. What we have currently for current phones exposes a plastic dummy filled with fluid, not human beings themselves. And understand that that is not safety testing. Formal safety testing is usually done by a government organization. It involves pre-market safety testing. It involves post-market survey to see if people are getting side effects. Are heavy users getting more side effects? Are people living near cell towers getting more side effects? We don't do that. The other thing is, this goes through a very rigorous process, a very formal medical process, and it's usually done by, again, a government agency like the FDA, not the FCC, who again is a spectrum auctioning agency that does not even have a health department. People need to remind their local legislators, the FCC does not even have a health department. And yet they're saying it's safe, and when they've been challenged lately in terms of whether it's safe, they are not able to answer the question because they simply won't look. And they're using these different methods to step around, avoid the issue, and defer the issue of health effects altogether.
Can I just jump in here, Kevin? How do you see this eventually, the tide eventually turning? In other words, people have been saying, scientists, hundreds of scientists, and thousands of citizens have been saying for years to the FCC and other agencies, your standards are not up to date, they're not applicable, they're not looking at the science, and they're just ignoring, they're just continuing their agenda. How can there be leverage so that the tide actually turns with regards to the corrupted agencies pushing through and enabling this agenda just to be rammed through?
Okay, and this is kind of a multi-part answer, but let me start with the beginning. First starts with people demanding that they look at health and safety, and that's begun to happen. And people need to push on their congressmen to demand that there be safety testing, demand that the safety guideline be taken out from underneath the FCC and given to the FDA and the NIH in collaboration, or even better, the NIH and the EPA together. They need to demand this from their Congress members at a federal level, although people like to work on a local level. But it's begun to happen, and it's because people are reaching out and pushing, and people should push more. So several congressmen have written letters to the FCC very specifically demanding answers in terms of health and safety. And let me tell you that the chairman of the FCC, again, who's a former Verizon attorney, answered back to them, but his answer shows the problem. And then we're going to talk about some of the questions he refused to answer that the congressmen themselves put forth. So first of all, the FCC chairman, Pai, would not call radio frequency radiation. He called it energy. And the industry and the FCC like to play this game. But if you look in all the scientific literature, that's what this is. This is radio frequency radiation. And it's got the same type of issues as other types of radiation, simply works slower. But this is a big issue when you have continuous exposure. The other thing is, he said, we're already doing testing. And we're doing hours. I heard him speak just a week or two ago, and he says, we're doing hours of testing. But what he doesn't say is, this is exposure testing. How much are people exposed? Now, exposure testing and safety testing are very different. Safety testing looks at, how are you being affected? How is a person being affected? So that's very, very different. The other thing is, he said, you know, if you would like, you can come and speak to our members of our engineering department. Now, remember, he's relying on engineers with an engineering background and the engineering department in the FCC, not a health department and not people with a biological background. Nothing qualifies them to speak to the biological effects, yet they promise everyone that biologically it's safe. So he put that in his letter as well. He talked about the EPA and how they rely on the EPA's recommendations. This is the first time I've heard this, because the EPA used to have a department that was looking very carefully at this issue, and we have letters from the EPA director, and it was their air pollution section, and that's what this is. This is air pollution. It's in the air. These waves affect your cells and cause biological and health harm. And so therefore it's pollution. And their air pollution department was looking at it, and they had scientists paid to do research. And they saw what we're seeing now, once again, and this was 20 years ago, they're seeing increased cancerous effects, increased neurological effects, increased reproductive harm, increased immune system harm. And we have a letter from their director talking about how the current safety guidelines do not address all mechanisms of harm. So it was interesting that he talked about the EPA this time, because that program was defunded by appropriations in Congress and asked not to participate in any more EMF activities because they were seen as of questionable value, quote unquote. So we would like to see the EPA more involved and funded to look at this issue. We'd like to see the NIH, that's recently done a study showing clear evidence of harm, oversee the safety guideline, the exposure guideline, for sure. The next thing is, he said, well, we refer to the IEEE. Now, the IEEE, in addition to ICNIRP, is an engineering organization. Again, they're holding on to this idea, along with physicists, that say only thermal harm can hurt people. He says, well, you know, we refer to the IEEE and the advice of the IEEE. That's completely inappropriate, but he's hanging on to it. And then he said, you can come by, and staffers can come by and talk to our engineering department and see the testing we're doing. Now, what's interesting with 5G is currently with cell phones, we're using SAR. And SAR looks at how much radiation is absorbed into the body.
Can you define SAR?
Yeah, specific absorption rate. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a perfect measure, because it takes a picture in the moment. It doesn't take into account your exposure over time. And that is our biggest concern, but it's something. And it doesn't look at non-thermal effects. And of course, something happens to your cells before they get heated or burned. And that's where we see the impairment over time and these very serious cancerous neurological effects. But we have that. And we have that in place for current cell phones. And he's talking about the testing that looks at heating only. What's interesting with 5G is they're not going to be using SAR. So the very inadequate look that we have at looking at absorption into the body that only looks at heat, we're not even going to be using that with 5G. Anything over 6 gigahertz, we're not using it. And why is that? Well, with 5G, the radiation and the waves become much, much shorter, down from several feet long, down to an inch to half an inch, to very tiny millimeter waves. And you're talking between 24 and 90 gigahertz is what Chairman Wheeler talked about when they was pushing out 5G. What people need to understand is, so the waves are not gonna be going as deeply into your body and through your body like current waves do, and people need to understand they do pass through your body. They're gonna be more concentrated in the skin and the eyes. But therefore, if all that radiation is concentrated in a very small area, you're gonna have more intense effects and you're gonna have some heating. So they don't wanna use SAR because they're not gonna be able to stay under their own limits. And we have a scientist, Dr. Kim from Georgia Southern, who has very clearly calculated that the SARs, if they use SARs, would be 30 times higher with 5G than with the current 4G. And that's very serious, because your skin is invigorated by all your nerves. And if you heat or damage your skin, the most protective part of your body, and again, the largest organ of your body, it's going to affect all the nerves that invigorate it. What's even more importantly is if you have heating, even small amounts of heating to the eyes, it's very serious matter because the eyes are not vascularized like the skin where they can cool if there's heating going on. If you heat the eyes, they're very vulnerable to heating and you can have very serious effects. So what's interesting is the FCC is saying we don't need to use SAR because the waves aren't going to be transmitting through the body into very important organs of your body. It's only going to be concentrated in your skin and eyes, which is kind of ridiculous, as if your skin and eyes aren't part of your body and aren't an important part of your body. But that's their logic for this, and it is absurd. And congressmen and local and state individuals need to call them out because this is ridiculous. So we don't have real safety testing. We have a safety guideline that only protects against exposure. And then the safety exposure guideline based on heating that we have currently for phones, we're not going to be using for 5G. And what's very important for people to understand and make clear to their local legislators, the design of 5G is to take concentrated, focused beams of microwave radiation and shoot them at your phone. The old 4G created huge waves, and your phone would pick up those waves as a radio receiver. But with 5G, it's very different. They're going to be very concentrated beams of radiation shot at your phone. And for this, the industry is saying we're going to have tremendous power savings. But understand this, if you hold your phone at your head, those beams of microwave radiation will be aimed at your head, and they're not going to be looking at how it heats your skin and eyes. This is a very, very serious, problem, and it seems pretty obvious, and this is the design of 5G. So it's important for local people to bring this to their local, this basic fact to their local legislators to demand and go to their congressmen and demand that real safety standards be implemented and that we look at this, especially given the design of 5G that is aimed very closely at people. But let me talk about some of the questions.
Can I just jump in there really quick? So you're encouraging people to bring this to their elected reps. In your experience and based upon the responses you're getting, is it that the reason why this hasn't reached critical mass, is it that elected officials are compromised via lobbying, or is it that they just don't have the information yet, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, and I think before we finish today, I want to give people a comprehensive plan for what they can do.
Please, yeah.
Make a difference.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, the telecom industry spent $92 million on lobbying last year. And your people listening just have to ask themselves, how much did they spend lobbying Congress? And so they're being brought information that is skewed and inaccurate, and there's no one there to contradict it. And that's why it's so important, I believe, with this issue that comes directly from the FCC. This program is being pushed by the FCC and Congress that supports and approves everything the FCC does, that they need to reach out on a national level. They must reach Congress and the FCC. This is where the problem is. And Congress has oversight power, and they need to exercise that oversight power. Right now, what we have is congressmen and senators questioning and pushing the FCC why they're not expanding more, why they're not putting wireless transmitters in more places. They are completely ignorant, or they're ignoring the health issue. And that is not okay. That should not be allowed. We cannot allow that. People must focus. It's on the federal level. I know it's frightening for some people, but there's really no reason to be frightened. These are your representatives. You can go see them in your local office, or you can come to DC and talk to all the legislators. Every building is a public building. Every meeting is a public meeting. You have the right, you have the responsibility to participate. This is a democracy. We need to participate. But let me tell you what some of the congressmen asked of the FCC, and they failed to answer. And let me tell you the congressmen who did it. to give them full credit, it was Congressman Tom Suozzi, Congressman Peter DeFazio, Congressman Andy Kim. They all wrote letters very specifically regarding health and safety. And I wanted to point out, this is from Congressman DeFazio, and this wasn't responded to by Chairman Pai. And the question was, what scientific literature or research has the FCC and FDA used to determine that, that 5G technology will not cause any adverse health effects in humans? Please cite specific studies and research conducted. And interestingly enough, when Senator Blumenthal in a Senate hearing asked the industry, what research are you doing to look at the health and safety issues of 5G? The answer was, we know of none that's being done. So the industry's not doing it. And for good reason, they used to fund research, but they had a hard time controlling the release of the findings. And they know it's harmful for sure. Number two, what gaps exist in the current understanding of possible health effects from 5G technology, as well as the possible effects of radio frequency radiation on the masses at large? Number three, what effort has the federal government taken to educate the public, as well as state and local governments, about its research on radio frequency radiation and safety guidelines as it relates to 5G technology? The reality is, they're not looking at it. They're not researching it. They're assuming it's okay because it's not going to heat or burn you. They can't even assume that because there will be heating again. So this is just putting business priorities over people's priorities. And what's interesting is they say, well, for business priorities, we want to be number one with the 5G rollout for business purposes. But honestly, fiber optic to all the way to the home is up to 10,000 times faster than wireless, is more cyber secure, is more private, and can carry tremendous amount of data. And in the case of an emergency, these wireless systems go down. They cannot run without power like landlines can, like fiber optic can. So we are really choosing an inferior technology when we have fiber optic, which is now very easy to run. You can run it almost like speaker wire along our current phone lines right into people's homes. We have a safer, superior alternative, but we're going with what they sell, which is wireless, rather than our congressman directing them.
Let me just jump in there. Yeah, we have a conversation as part of the summit with Dr. Timothy Sheckley, and he explains how this is done with fiber, with wired, and he cites examples of how some cities have actually done it. And just it's so straightforward, you know, that the technology is there, and we just need to demand it be implemented, to team up with our local governments and help them regain control of their local infrastructure. So, yeah, please continue.
And like you're saying, this is an issue of industry directing government,
yep,
rather than the government directing industry for what's best for the public. And if you really want to lay the foundation for the next economic revolution, you use fiber. Because what's interesting about 5G is they say, well, we're hoping to get speeds as quick as landline. Well, why not just use landlines? I mean, and fiber is so much faster than even landlines. So, and we know there's been much money that has been diverted that was supposed to lay fiber across the nation and has been diverted into the development of wireless. And I'm sure other people are talking about that. But let me talk about what Congressman Kim asked that wasn't answered by Chairman Pai. And I think these are important questions for people to ask. Number one, what recent independence, very important, scientific studies demonstrate the safety of 5G technology? The independent part is very important because the industry is doing a lot of counter research. In this case, they're just staying away from this because it's going to be very hard to show it's safe. Number two, has the FCC or any other agency conducted research into potential long-term health outcomes of repeated exposure to radio frequency similar to those present in high-band 5G cells? If so, what were the results of such studies? This issue of long-term prolonged exposures, where the concern about cancer, neurological, immune system, and reproductive harm is there, that's what's been avoided in the science and absolutely needs to be done before we roll out this technology, not as or after we do it. Number three, have any 5G telecommunication service providers conducted studies in the long-term health outcomes of repeated exposures to radio frequency similar to those present in high band 5 cells? If so, what were the results of such study? Number four, how are the FCC and 5G service providers working with local governments and municipalities to address citizens' concerns regarding 5G implementation? Five, what procedure exists for residents to file complaints with the FCC regarding the installation of small cell 5G sites in their neighborhood? So the congressmen have begun to ask the right questions. We need to reach out to all of the congressmen. The FCC can no longer be allowed to get away with this, and people are being harmed. They are getting away with harming people, they are getting away with disabling people, and it's not an exaggeration to say that they're getting away with killing people in the case of cancer, which has been clearly linked to wireless radiation exposure.
So Kevin, let's go deeper into the science and the effects. Give us more of your background knowledge and the science and the effects. How do we know the scope of harm that is being caused here by wireless and now 5G?
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question, and people, and it's important for me to talk about. I consult and communicate with doctors and scientists, engineers and attorneys every day. So cancer epidemiologists, physicists, toxicologists, cellular biologists, and attorneys that deal with this issue and the people who are getting harmed by it on a daily basis. What's important to know about that is the FCC doesn't have any of those people, and they're the ones saying it's safe. Another thing about the science, which is important in terms of advocating for yourself, is the legislators don't care about the science. They don't care about the science because they don't feel equipped to deal with it. And that's why they refer to these agencies that have been corrupted and captured. But what can you tell them to show that it's very harmful? The first thing you can tell them is that there is $1.9 billion worth of lawsuits regarding cell phones causing brain tumors. And you can look this up just by Googling Murray versus Motorola 2001. This is important because the case would not be in the courts if there wasn't sufficient evidence to bring the case. The other thing that people need to understand is this has been in the courts for 17 years. So this is the MO of industry, drag this out and delay it. The other way you can prove that there are health effects and people are getting sick is look at the smart meter rollout. Currently, and I'm gonna say roughly half the states have some form of opt-out, but let's just say many of the states have some form of opt-out. Why is that important? Because they got opt-outs for people to say no to these small wireless transmitters that are supposed to measure their heat or their power or electricity. They got opt-outs by going through a process of going to their PUC or their commission and saying, we have gotten sick. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of documented testimonies of people getting sick from very low-powered, according to the industry, very infrequently transmitting wireless smart meters. And these formal opt-outs are proof that people get sick from it and they need relief from it. So that's a very important way to show there's a problem. The other thing that's happened very currently, and is clear evidence that people can get sick, and you started off by asking questions about microwave sickness. That's what this is. It's microwave sickness. And people, all they need to do is go to Webster Dictionary online and Google microwave sickness, and you have the definition right there, a good working definition. But importantly, recently, CBS and others covered the CIA's coming out and saying that the embassy workers in Cuba had developed basically microwave sickness. They were attacked by a microwave weapon. There was no heating or burning of these workers, but yet they still developed all kinds of neurological problems, headaches, dizziness, nausea. It wasn't just one person, it was multiple members of the family. This was all done below our safety guidelines, and this is microwave sickness. What's interesting is 60 Minutes did another episode talking about that this is also happening in the Chinese embassy, and the state workers are reporting the same thing. So why might this be happening? Well, most most likely, these communist countries are aiming a microwave weapon at these families to monitor their communications. And it will do that, but there will also be side effects. We shouldn't be surprised because Russia has, according to an army review that we have, five times as much research on millimeter wave effects that the 5G uses than the rest of the world combined. So we shouldn't be surprised that they're using this as a weapon. So these are clear examples of how we can show that people are getting sick from this. And it brings up a very important point, and I'm glad you brought it up. It's probably one of the most important points. The way a lot of these organizations say there's no effects, they say there is no human health effects. There is no evidence of human health effects. What they're not saying, and people are assuming, is there is no evidence of biological effects. There is clear evidence of biological effects, and most lay people think biological effects and health effect, human health effects, they're the same thing. But they tease and they step around the truth by just focusing on human health effects. The problem with human health effects, to clearly prove them, you have to experiment on people. And when you have clear animal biological effects showing it can cause cancer, neurological problems, immune system problems, and reproductive harm, ethically, you cannot experiment on people and give them those effects to prove it conclusively. So they are working what they know is kind of a crack in the door. But understand this, there are clear biological effects from wireless radiation along the entire spectrum of wireless radiation, and that human health effects are proven by these examples that I'm talking about now. And we are literally being allowed to be experimented on by the FCC, and they're getting away with it as it is now. So hopefully that answers your question in terms of the research. And before we finish today, I'm going to point your audience to some websites where they can get as many studies as they would like.
I just want to jump into there and drill down into that. These mainstream media reports even talking about the use of microwave or millimeter wave weapons for spying that have health effects, you know, that governments are doing upon embassies and so forth. This isn't something new. This was discussed in Robert O. Becker's book, The Body Electric, was happening in the 60s between the U.S. and Russia embassies. I believe he cites it was happening in both, countries spying on each other, using these microwave weapons on each other. Tell us more about that. What have you been able to uncover about that? Does it look like they're using, you know, microwaves or millimeter waves, or is there any additional information that you have on those stories that the mainstream media and did not tell us about?
These are good questions. Now, people need to understand, 5G uses millimeter waves, which are just small, densely packed microwaves, and then there's microwaves. But if you go to a website that we've set up focused on 5G called 5Ginformation.net, 5Ginformation.net, and people can reach me by emailing me at 5Gisharmful@gmail.com, 5Gisharmful@gmail.com, you're going to see a couple things. One thing is that we have a report from the Army that looks at biological effects of millimeter waves, and they said those effects are very clear. And they said those effects, many of them, are non-thermal, and then calling into question our safety guidelines. This comes from our own Army looking at it, and they have every reason to want to not say that, because they want to use this for their operations and for their weapons. The other thing is, there was a weapon system developed called the Active Denial System that uses millimeter waves. And before they could develop this weapon, they had to research it. So the Army translated all of the science from Russia, particularly, that had the bulk of it, and looked at biological and health effects so they could understand how this weapon's going to be used. And that is all in the possession of the Army, and citizens should demand that their congressmen get information and access to those studies and make them very public. This would be a very very good idea. The other thing you're going to see on the website, and you can Google it yourself, of course, If you Google Navy Medical Research Institute 1972, what you'll see is that back in the day when we had radar on aircraft carriers, Navy men were reporting symptoms. And this is a two-part report. The first 20 pages of the first report defines 122 symptoms of basically microwave sickness and talks about neurological, genetic effects, immune system problems, and then cites 6,000 studies support the symptoms that they were coming up with in the Navy men. So when the industry says that there's no science or evidence of adverse effects, they are simply lying, and people can find it there, they can find it on our site. And it's important for people to know, because a lot of these legislators have experience with the military and they do listen to what the military has come up with. So those are three sources of tremendous amounts of information that you can get. But the other thing on our site, which is important, is that, as I said, they don't do pre-market safety testing, they don't do post-market survey, they don't look around cell towers if people are getting sick. We have a drop-down that lists, I think we have 10 studies there from different countries where they looked at cell towers and what happens around cell towers. And we see increasing neurological and cancerous effects close to the antennas. This is important because with 5G, we're talking about putting antennas every 200 feet. So I think this is very, very important for us to talk about. And so you should encourage your congressman to get the information that the CIA based their finding that these people were attacked by a microwave weapon. There was evidence that they looked at. There were findings they looked at. And that's your evidence that people are getting sick from wireless radiation and microwave radiation.
Mm-hmm. So your website is 5ginformation.net, correct? And what else would you say is, as far as what can people do to protect themselves and their families from 5G radiation and wireless radiation exposures?
Yeah, so let's get to the good stuff. People need to reach out and need to start on a federal level. They need to reach out to their congressman and begin a conversation. And it needs to be a very direct conversation that points out the serious problems with our safety protocol that hasn't been applied to wireless, but has been applied to lots of other agents on those World Health Organization lists to protect us, that for wireless has been exempted. So we definitely need to reach out. And the other issue is this. This is not about information. I know you don't want to hear that because you're disseminating information right now. This is an issue of power. Okay? The industry has power. So we need power and we lack power. So where can we get that power? First of all, you can get power, right, from spending money. Okay, the industry spent $92 million lobbying Congress. I'm not asking people to spend $92 million, but I am asking you to impact Congress, to reach out to Congress. And the best way to do that is to a lobbyist. Lobbyists cost money, but that's the way the system works. It's a pay-to-play system. If you ask anybody in D.C., that's the case. So get a lobbyist. There are excellent lobbyists out there. They know the ropes. They have relationships with these Congress people for 20 or 30 years. They have relationships with the party that can get them access. We don't have access. We have access to very low-level people in their offices. We need access to the members themselves. I speak to the members themselves as they're going to and fro from committee meetings, when they're going to vote. You can speak to them personally if you come here, and that's a great idea. That's a great way to spend your time, and you can find the list of committee meetings posted publicly. How else can we have power? Okay, the next way we can have power is by our vote, okay? And when I say our vote, it matters that you're gonna vote against him and tell him, if you don't address this issue, I'm gonna vote against you. That's not enough. You say, I am an organizer, and that's the way you should present yourself as an organizer, and say, I am going to organize my community against you unless you address this issue sufficiently, because it's most seriously important. So they listen to organizers who can organize votes. They'd rather have you working for them when it comes election time, certainly not working against them. But make it clear, this is my issue. This is bottom line important to me. I will organize against you. I've already begun. Show them your email list. Show them your phone list. Talk about all the people you talk to. If you go door to door, say, I'm going door to door. They are scared of people going door to door. They respect their foot soldiers when they run for office because they go door to door. If you're going door to door, that's great. What else can you do that will have a powerful impact? Go around cell towers that you have now and look for symptoms. Start documenting people with, because it'll be there. Increase cancer around cell towers that are already there. Increase neurological effects. Start documenting what they won't look at and say, go to those city councils and say, people are currently getting sick from this technology and now you're gonna expand it and put it everywhere and near my home. That's not okay. These are their names. This is their sickness. This is how far they are from the cell antenna. I think this is very effective. The other source of power is lawyers. Again, they cost money, but we need to lawyer up. The lawyers are the ones that are helping pass laws and implement laws to keep this unfair harm of our citizens going. So we need lawyers to argue with it and stop it. So we need to lawyer up, and we need to bring in our friends that are attorneys and legal clerks, and work the legal avenues we can. And I think clearly people are being harmed by this. How much they're being harmed, we can argue, but they are being harmed. And if you're harming people and it continues, that is a criminal offense, and people should handle it that way.
Is it, let me just jump in there. We are in the summit talking with a lawyer from Australia, Ray Broomhall, who's had success in actually not only preventing but removing hundreds of small cell sites. He uses the criminal process, and he uses the medical system as well, like a doctor's authority. From your perspective, specifically, do you have any suggestions or guidance on legal mechanisms, for example, criminal negligence or class actions? I know class actions typically have been getting tossed out. We've been looking at commercial administrative liability actions. What can you offer us any specifics there in terms of what you see being potentially fruitful?
Okay. I'm not an attorney and I'm not going to give legal advice, but I think people do need to get legal advice. And the harm is absolutely there. And the science with the National Toxicology Program study making a causal link between cell phone radiation and clear evidence of carcinogenicity, I think we have the scientific basis to absolutely move forward. But that was just one of the more recent studies. There were many studies before that. And I know other scientists are talking about those other studies. And what's also important to understand, the Italian Supreme Court has already made a causal connection between cell phone radiation and brain cancer, brain tumors. So they've already done that. And what's very important, and I'm glad you brought it up, is that this is pollution. And the insurance industry, and this is a good example of how do we prove, once again, how do we prove that this is harmful and people are getting sick? The insurance industry has classified wireless radiation as a high-risk agent. And this is important because they've looked at the science, that's their job, and they've done risk assessments. What the FDA has not done and should have done for the NTP study is then do a risk assessment to then extrapolate these biological findings to human exposures. They failed to do the risk assessment. But the insurance industry has looked at the science, has done a risk assessment, and has classified as a high-risk agent. And then they have excluded it from coverage by classifying it as a pollutant. And I think this is important because I'm looking at a brochure right now, which is actually from Verizon, called Long Live Your Phone, which is ironic. Your phone's gonna live, but we're not. And in it, it says that we do not cover our phones from damage from all these external forces, including pollutants. But what's interesting is, even in Verizon's own brochure, they define wireless by all its terms, wireless radiation, as a pollutant. But let me read it to you. This is from item number 16. It says, pollution, the discharge, dispersal, seepage, migration, or escape of pollutants. Pollutants means any solid, liquid, gaseous, or thermal irritant or contaminant, including smoke, vapor, soot, fumes, acid, alkalines, chemicals, artificially produced electric fields, magnetic fields, electromagnetic fields, sound waves, microwaves, and all artificially produced ionizing and non-ionizing radiation, and non-ionizing radiation and or waste. This is really what's happening industry-wide, but I like to use Verizon's own brochure for insurance for their devices to point out that even in their own insurance, they classify it by what it is, a pollutant, and we should handle it like a pollutant, and the EPA should be regulating this like a pollutant, and we should be minimizing it like a pollutant, and we should be educating people on how to minimize their exposure to this pollutant. So I think with the insurance industry classifying it as a pollutant, this can also help us in terms of protecting ourselves from this criminal harm.
Who's actually insuring then these wireless carriers? Because they're not being insured, right? Lloyd's of London and other insurance giants have publicly stated we don't cover wireless products. So are they even insured at all? Like, what's going on there?
And that's very interesting. My understanding, and again, I'm not an insurance expert, is that the secondary insurers aren't willing to insure on these health effects, biological and health effects. And then, so therefore, the companies have to self-insure. And that's important for investors to know because that opens them up to tremendous liability and possible costs in the future. And that's exactly what they say in their annual reports. But people using phones have no idea that they're protecting themselves and they've classified it this way. But they need to know. Legislators need to know. It has to start coming out in the media. And the industry has intimidated the media by threatening to withdraw their media dollars, and they're millions and millions of dollars off, and they're not willing to do that. And it was funny, I was talking to a reporter who used to work for the Huffington Post, and he said, you know, they couldn't stop us from reporting on it, so Verizon bought Huffington Post, and that's how they stopped us. So people might need to understand the industry with $1.9 billion worth of lawsuits and billions of dollars behind that in terms of lawsuits, they're really willing to do anything and spend any amount of money to keep this, the truth about wireless radiation exposure, quiet and silent.
Thank you, Kevin, for all of this information. I mean, I just need to, I feel I want to shift gears here and like ask you personally. I mean, you've been on the ground and on the airwaves for several years, educating, you know, people in positions of power and others about these matters. Now, what drew you into this area? What gave you the motivation, the inspiration to dedicate, you know, a vast portion of your life to get this message out?
I had people very close to me personally and at work who developed cancerous tumors as a result of their exposure, and they were very healthy people with healthy habits that developed tumors in the site of their exposure from the antennas. And when I started researching the issue myself, I found thousands and thousands of studies, and I just had to think, why haven't I heard about this? Why didn't these people know? We could educate people on how to use wireless more safely. We could demand that the industry make safer products, and they easily could. We could use wired fiber and landlines for a majority of our communication and data use, which is really what 5G is about, data use, and use wireless to a minimum and locate cell tower antennas as far away from human beings as possible. That's the safe vision, fiber to the home with wired connections to your computer, your keyboard and your mouse, a wired phone, and then when you leave your home, use wirelessly to a minimum and locate the cell antennas as far away from people as humanly possible. This is the smart home. This is the smart community. And by the way, it's much, much faster. And by the way, landlines and fiber, they have zero latency. They're talking about increasing latency for 5G here on the Hill, and speed and latency, zero. I mean, they are super fast. So this is definitely the way to go. The industry has gotten away with harming and killing people for long enough. And with 5G, we're talking about maximizing people's exposure and rather than minimizing it, and it needs to stop. Let me mention some websites people can go to for more information. You can email me at 5gisharmful@gmail.com. You can go to the website that I set up for 5G issues, 5Ginformation.net, 5Ginformation.net. I go to saferemr.com. That's a website managed by Joe Moskowitz at UC Berkeley School of Public Health, saferemr.com. The Bioinitiative Report, or bioinitiative.org, looks at 3,600 studies and reviews them and puts them all in one place for easy access. People should look there. Environmental Health Trust, ehtrust.org, has put up a lot of great information and videos people can access there. There's their subsite, Parents for Safe Technology, a lot of people have enjoyed. One's talking about children especially are very important. And for local people who are trying to fight 5G transmitters locally, and before I get to those, mgsafetech.org, this is a site set up by medical doctors to educate other medical doctors. mdsafetech.org, people should look at this this site almost first. But two sites that really focus on local issues and how to push back. What is 5G.info? What is 5G.info? Scientistsforwiredtech.org, scientists, the number four, wiredtech.org, and My Street, My Choice, which is completely focused on local issues and how to push back against 5G, mystreetmychoice.org. These are resources people can find tremendous amounts of information, realize they're not alone, and arm them to push back on what is absolutely a grave injustice that is continuing. And you ask me the question, why did I get involved? Why have I spent years of my life working on this, dedicated myself in every possible way? Because this is truly unjust. This is unbelievable that this continues in this country, and that the FCC, in cooperation with the FDA, the American Cancer Society, and unfortunately wrapped in the World Health Organization, have been allowed to work around and sidestep these biological effects and health effects that are affecting people right now. And we have testimonies from every state in the nation, innocent people, professionals, doctors, lawyers, accountants, technicians, computer specialists, chiropractors, social workers, truck drivers, you name it, we have people that have been harmed, disabled, and whose lives and proper civil liberties have been infringed on by this technology, and that's been allowed to continue due to the undue influence of industry here in Congress and with the FCC. So this is where we need to focus our efforts. We need to exercise our power in terms of spending money and getting lobbyists, in terms of spending money and getting lawyers and arming ourselves with attorney representation. And in terms of taking this to the courts for what it is, a criminal matter, and for exercising our right as citizens to participate in our democracy and exercise our ability to organize others and affect the vote of these representatives. These congressmen run for office in the House every 2 years. They are always worried about votes. They are always worried about votes. We need to exercise that concern. And our senators, we need to push just as hard. They have the staff to look at this in depth. The Senate has been woken up. I have focused my efforts there. The House needs to be continued to be educated. You can do it. You must do it if you want to protect yourself, your families from this clear environmental and health hazard that is causing clear injury. And that's the way it needs to be said to our citizens, and will increasingly do so with 5G and antennas every 200 to 400 feet emitting high density wireless radiation without our consent, and with science clearly showing biological harm.
Kevin Modis, thank you so much for your strong words of encouragement, your action over the years, and your guidance, and for spending time with us today to get us up to speed and to encourage us with what we can do. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, 5gisharmful@gmail.com. Join the efforts to stop this absolute injustice.